Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
The following broadcast of Lights, Camera, Barstool was previously recorded in front of a live studio audience at the Aventura Mall outside of the Super Bowl in Miami, Florida, in conjunction with Jay Leno and The Tonight Show.
And now, Jay Leno!
Well, the sun is out tonight. Today again, what a storm we had. Was that unbelievable? It's like the storm of the century. No, it was. In fact, I know, Kev, out of your house, the floodwaters were so high, Kev had to use his inflatable Halle Berry doll as a flotation device just to get out of there.
It works really good.
It works good, man.
Okay, thank you. How about our good friend Jay Leno coming through for us, hosting today's show, our final live show here from Miami at the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl just ended a few hours ago. Congratulations to the
Kansas City Chiefs
on winning the Super Bowl. We're very excited. A Pitbull live performance. We're back here live at the Aventura Mall in Miami, Florida at Dylan's Candy Bar, Trill.
I love it. All this candy, I'm in heaven right now, Jeff. This is great.
So much candy.
Look at all these scoopers.
Eating these jelly beans.
Little holsters for the scoopers on the candy things too. I bet they change these all the time. I bet
Definitely.
This candy is changed all the time. When you think about the Super Bowl, that's what you want, right? You want 60 minutes of football, two teams playing as hard as they can, Smash Mouth style, leave it all on the field. And we got it tonight, folks. We got it.
Just happy the team with the red on their uniform won, just like we predicted.
Commercials were hilarious too.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, also, I take no pleasure in reporting this, but Casey Wolf has been arrested. I am not clear what the charges are, but I do know the Miami-Dade County Sheriff's Department has taken Casey Wolf into custody, which, if you look at a picture of Casey Wolf, I'm going to be honest, doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. Not even a little bit. I like Doritos commercial.
Did you open the pod? Yeah, Doritos was funny. Like the Clydesdales, Puppy Monkey yep. Baby. Kid puppy was back. That was shocking.
They just re-aired the same Puppy Monkey Baby commercial. Mm-hmm. That was nuts.
Wild move.
I like the Doritos commercial because it was the Old Town Road thing.
Yep.
Yep. And we have a live performance to end it here in the mall from Pitbull later on this evening. He'll be performing. Jay Leno will be back out for sure. Maybe some surprise guests rolling on through. The Super Bowl's over. No one's at the parties or anything. They're all here at the mall celebrating, using all their gift cards they got in their swag bag under their seat. Very exciting stuff.
What do you think about the halftime show?
It was Jay Leno and Shakira, folks.
Yeah.
They were both there.
I thought it was – I liked when they – I forget their name. I like when they brought them out.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of did a little guest feature.
Crazy that J-Lo had that shirt that said fuck the Oscars because of her snub. I thought that was pretty mm-hmm. crazy.
I like when they perform their hit songs. That was my favorite part of their performance.
Shakira.
She's actually like, this isn't even part of the bit, but like she got arrested for $12 million tax fraud. Not
she
even joking.
Arrested, right?
I or she something. Just, she got indicted. I don't know how that works, but she's in trouble for $12 million tax fraud. Best tweet I saw was somebody quote tweeting saying, "Put her hips on the stand," which that's good shit.
That's a good tweet.
I feel like if you're, I don't know, don't like 60% of professional soccer players get arrested for tax fraud.
Yeah, fucking
not arrested or just like I don't even want to say indicted. What's the other word that starts with an I? Yeah, in trouble.
That starts with an I.
Implicated.
I think Messi's dad went to like Guantanamo Bay for like $12 trillion in tax evasion or something stupid.
I mean, pretty sure Lionel Messi got in trouble for
that. That's what I just said, Jeff.
You think you said his dad?
Yeah.
So his dad took the fall.
His dad's his fall guy.
Lionel Messi just had his dad change his like chase.com banking password and like just say, oh, my dad was managing my money, and his dad took the fall for him. Now, I don't know if that actually happened, but that's my headcanon now.
Maybe his dad just like still held a checking account for Messi.
You got to call really. I'm just going to come out and say it. Shakira should have called really, because he's been on the lam, but he hasn't been busted.
It got dropped. Oh, he's busted. Messi had a 21-month prison sentence for tax fraud reduced to a 252,000 euro fine, which to me, that means – I don't know what that means.
That's a pretty fucking great deal.
The judge said he had to score 20 goals in the UEFA Champions Cup finals or he goes to jail. That's actually a good plot for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Mr. 3000.
I was about to say, I was also about to say Mr. 3000, even though that has nothing to do with that movie. Back to baseball. That was it.
Yeah, but it's like playing a sport trying to accomplish
set objectives. Yeah.
Kind of like harder. Too Fast, Too Furious. Didn't he just, he could have like gone to jail or he just went to Tokyo or Tokyo Drift, excuse me. Something like that.
I think so. The hillbilly Bobby Hill guy.
We're going to talk about Tokyo Drift because there is a Tokyo Drift subplot baked into the first thing we're going to talk about today. And that's the Fast and Furious 9 trailer. Oh, we'll get to that in a minute. Oh, my goodness. We're also going to talk about taxes, too, because technically there's a little joke about taxes in National Treasure 2 Book of Secrets that we're going to be reviewing today. We may as well just knock both them out. So we're going to do a throwback review of National Treasure Book of Secrets. Anything else before we get into news here? But one of the most ridiculous trailers that we've talked about since we started this podcast today.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get to it. Let's do an ad read first. This ad read.
Wait, let me just put this up to the mic. I gotta crack open that White Rock Star, baby.
Hell yeah,
sugar free.
Hell yeah,
just creating kidney stones as we speak.
This episode is brought to you by Let Go. That is right, folks, and actually not even just folks. Trill, let me ask you, do you have anything you're trying to get rid of? Anything good that you have that you're just trying to get rid of? You're trying to sell it locally because you don't need it anymore.
Yeah, I have a signed J.J. Redick jersey, a Duke jersey, from back when I was a Duke fan for a bit, and I don't want it anymore because now I am a who's number one in the rankings? I'm a fan of them.
You're a Baylor fan now. Incredible stuff.
A big Baylor fan. You know what I always say about Baylor? Like, not only are they a good athletic program, but they operate under the highest standards of morals.
Fact.
Letgo is the place to go to sell your stuff. Download the Letgo mobile app at letgo.barstool and tweet at us to tell us what you'll do with the extra money you'll be saving off of Letgo. Whether you're moving in with someone, moving to a different apartment, you're getting married, going back to school, leaving school, buying and selling sneakers, outfits, anything. The easiest way to do it is Letgo. I've used it before, especially furniture, by the way. If you're moving in the city or any big city, furniture selling, good place to do it is Letgo. Letgo.com/barstool. All right, Fast and Furious 9, officially titled F9, The Fast Saga. Officially titled.
It's here.
F9. The Fast Saga. That's a real title for this movie. Directed by Justin Lin. He's back. Justin Lin had done previously, I believe. Which ones did he do in the Fast and Furious? He did Tokyo Drift, Fast and Furious, Fast 5, Fast and Furious 6. And now he'll be doing F9, a.k.a. F9, The Fast Saga, a.k.a. Fast and Furious 9. This is one of the longest trailers I've ever seen in my life.
3 minutes. Almost 4. I felt like I watched the whole movie. They also pretty much included the teaser trailer in this too.
Yes.
It was like the teaser trailer was a part of the trailer.
Yeah.
It went in and, you know, we saw a lot, folks.
We did. We learned who John Cena is playing. John Cena is playing Jacob Toretto, but it's spelled J-A-K-O-B. So I wish it was like Jakob Toretto.
Jakob.
Like a podal.
He's playing the brother of Dom, a guy that we've never heard of, never heard about once. Dominic Toretto and his family must face Dominic's younger brother, Jacob, a deadly assassin who is working with their old enemy, Cypher, played by Charlize Theron, a man who talks about family nonstop, no matter what. Family comes first. There's always family. Nine movies. We're just starting to hear about Jacob for the first time. Very in a trailer that involves him catching a car. A car is thrown.
Bare-fisting.
No. Yeah. Is he wearing the suit that Idris Elba's character had on?
You think? He didn't have a suit. He had like enhancements, like fucking Captain America shit.
Oh, I thought he.
That's
I thought
true.
It was like
yeah,
his, he had like enhancements in his spine and shit.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah,
the suit did look cool though. It had the gun holster and sewed into the shoulder. It was sick.
Then Sung Kang is back as Han, who I will say. On the Wikipedia page, the movie said a former member of Dom's team who was believed to have been killed. No, he was killed.
He was killed on the Han job.
He was very dead in Tokyo Drift and very deader in Fate of the Furious, right? Like, or not Fate of the Furious. Yeah, that was the previous one. No. Well, whatever. Whenever they introduced Jason Statham, that movie, they had a post-credit tease where he blew up.
Like, yep.
He blew up. He was dead. He's just back now. He's been hanging out for a few years.
I like that. That's fine. There's no rules here anymore.
No, which I respect.
We were literally just finding out. We're just finding out about his brother. We just found out about his son. People can obviously be part of this franchise and just not be heard about for movies and movies and movies upon a time. That's totally fine. The one thing I took issue with is how do you name your one kid like Dom Toretto and then your next kid Jacob? Like, I just don't think that lines up at all. I don't like that at all. One's like a very, I feel like almost Italian feel to it, and then Jacob Toretto just doesn't mix. Like Gianni Versace and then like Frank Versace. I just don't like it.
Are they, do they share DNA or are they like adoptive brothers? I don't know.
Good question.
I don't think it matters, but just going back to the name. The thing about if I'm like, let's just say I'm Cypher, right? And I'm hiring an assassin. I'm not going to hire someone that looks like John Cena.
Why?
Because he's the most like conspicuous, suspicious looking person I've ever seen. If you had him running around, it'd be really easy to identify that dude. I feel like if you hire an assassin, you want them to blend in, not be like 6'2", jacked, and basically look like G.I. Joe.
Well, I guess they had Jason Statham and that didn't work out for him. Like having an inconspicuous guy doesn't work so much, and having a super soldier worked a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. This is getting it. That was a Cinema Sense esque complaint. It doesn't matter. There's no logic. Can we talk about the end of the trailer? Because I had no idea what was going on. There was like a plane, a magnetic plane that picked
up. What kind of plane is that?
The plane has magnets. It's
what's like, okay. What plane is that most similar to?
It looked like a stealth bomber.
Yeah, it looked like a B-2 bomber.
Okay.
Or like one of the stealth fighters or whatever. But then they picked it up and then they did, there's some like cable thing and they're swinging the car. It looked, I don't even know. My brain didn't even know what was happening. I just went into a disassociative state.
Are we in agreement that the title F9 stinks?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's pretty.
I mean, F9, the Fast Saga. Well, what do we? I mean, come on. And I don't even hate these movies. Like, I'm on record. Like, I think a couple of these are actually really good. I thought the last one was a major step down from Furious 7, which was pretty awesome. But I mean, the titles with this franchise. But I guess that's part of the charm. They're just ridiculous.
Fuck Team 10 up next.
Can't also, wait.
And we're complaining about it, but I'm going to be honest. I'm going to enjoy it. I just.
Oh, I cannot wait for this. But yeah, I don't think this is going to be any good.
No, it's not good. It's not good in the same way that like the nachos at a sporting event are not good, but you'll still eat them because they're
That's a good analogy. I like that. You've been on fire recently with them.
Thank you. Everybody says my analogies are da-bomb. .com.
Where do they film the tropical scenes? Was that in? That looks like it was in Thailand.
Rainforest Half Cafe.
I couldn't tell if that was similar to the...
The movie's filmed at the Rainforest Cafe in Chicago.
I could see the gift shop in the back.
Yeah, go.
I thought for a second it looked like It looked like it was going to be in a similar location to Hobbs and Shaw, because I'm a little woke in the fact that I think Hobbs and Shaw show up in this movie at some point. I think we've been duped, right? Because Helen Mirren's in this. She plays Shaw's mom, who made a cameo in Fate of the Furious and then was in Hobbs and Shaw. I'm a little woke to that. I think we know that they've mended fences, because I believe they're going to be back for the 10th one, right? So I think we're going to get them in this movie.
That would be hilarious work if, like, the oldest feud between, like, Vin Diesel and Tyrese and The Rock is just all, like, a work, and then it's all just to make F9 that much better, and it's just not that much better.
We could get Ryan Reynolds in this.
I can see Ryan Reynolds' character going, crossing between the franchises as well. Mm-hmm.
I could see that, like, I think the feud was real, but I also think that it did wrap up a while ago, and they kind of, like, calm down a bit on it.
Well,
it's been reported that they're in 10. So I just think that, I don't know, I have this sneaking suspicion that they didn't just blow all the big surprises in this trailer. Because a year ago tomorrow, when the last Hobbs and Shaw trailer came out, we said the same thing. We said the Super Bowl trailer, like, so much going on. They showed everything. We ended up liking the movie a lot, and there was a big surprise with the Ryan Reynolds character. And a couple other things as well. So I don't think they just revealed the two big surprises and then we don't get something else, which I would imagine would be Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah, I can or see Reynolds. One of them. Reynolds being like the Mercutio of this franchise, these two now separate sort of franchises, and he just bridges that gap and then eventually they all come back together.
Yeah, I could see Reynolds being the surprise here too. I think that would be more likely than Hobbs and Shaw, because you'd have to pay. I would see Shaw more so than Hobbs, because I feel like The Rock would cost an astronomical amount to get him in this movie.
An unhideable amount.
Unless it was some, like, preordained contract stipulation to signing into the Hobbs and Shaw franchise or whatever that would require him to be in this movie. Otherwise, you'd have to buy his time to film this shit, basically. Which, I mean, stranger things have happened, right? It's not, I mean, whatever.
I mean, The Rock has it in his contracts that he has to be able to film at least one Instagram hype video for every movie he makes. So I'm pretty sure he's not in this one.
I don't know. Maybe we can just go through his Instagram, see if we can pick up, like, clues.
They paid him in one sushi cheat meal. That's what they paid him.
If I were to put money on it, I would say probably not in it, right?
Yes.
Like, I would say odds are they're not, but I'm not going to rule it out. Like, I think the idea that they're returning in 10, not 9. Like, they probably made, like, there's got to be a stinger or something in this. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, but man, this trailer was a nightmare. But I guess, what the fuck did I expect? Joke's on me. And also, it sounds as though people in the know are saying that the trailer lines up with pre-trailer release leaks, that they will be in space in this movie. Insiders are saying they will be in space.
That's F10. That should be F10. That should be the 10th installment. I don't think that's F9
in this trailer, dude. I don't know.
Maybe trailer 2.
Maybe.
They're going to have another one that's 5 minutes long.
There's a lot of rockets in that trailer, so.
Yeah, they put, like, the giant jet engine on, like, a Honda Sonata or something? Hyundai Sonata?
Oh, it's a Fiero.
Okay.
Pontiac Fiero, which those are notorious for having body kits to make them look like Ferraris, by the way.
Really?
Very funny. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I think they're mid-engine. They're like cheap mid-engine cars. I don't know. Whatever.
That's been car talk.
Your car talk for the week.
Well, let's not hang up the car talk. How about the star of the movie Cars? Owen Wilson is going to be in the show Loki, the Disney Plus Marvel Cinematic Universe streaming series Loki, which is going to dip into different realms, dimensions. It's going to tie into WandaVision and Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. How about Owen Wilson in the MCU?
That was a great segue, Jeff. I just want to know. Awesome.
I liked it. I didn't know how you were going to do that, but anytime we can reference Cars on here, it's a good thing.
Yeah, you know us. We strive to always reference Pixar's greatest franchise.
Mm-hmm. I think I like Owen Wilson. I like the Wilson brothers. I think they're fine. I don't feel like this is a very splashy ad, though, because it's Venus, you know, it's Owen Wilson.
He hasn't really been in much in a while.
Yeah. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but, you know, Owen Wilson's always been, like, I feel like kind of a low-key guy anyway, right?
You stole my joke, you dickhead. Stole my fucking joke. I was going to say Owen Wilson. Folks, I was going to say Owen Wilson low-key loves some Strange because this movie ties into Doctor Strange. You ruined it.
I had a better setup.
You did. You had a much better setup.
Took a while.
But I was going to have a better setup in the joke. Oh, never mind. Folks. You fucking ruined that one. It's good though, right? Because like Owen really hasn't been in many live action roles, and I feel like the last one I saw was like 2016 probably. So I mean, I like him getting work, but as long as it gets to be more comedic than dramatic, because I was saying when I blogged about it, the one like super dramatic role I remember seeing Owen Wilson in, besides, like, not like Marley and Me shit, which I wouldn't really count, is do you remember Enemy? Is it Enemy? No, Behind Enemy Lines, the one where he gets shot down. He's a fighter pilot.
That was like 2001. That's, yeah, 20 years ago.
Like,
right?
Gene Hackman's in it.
That was 2001.
God damn.
And the, you know who's in that movie is the bad Russian guy from Home Alone 3. He plays an evil Russian guy in that too. Or that, I don't know, fucking
that
Serbian
guy does.
Yeah, the bad guy from Home Alone 3 is the bad guy in Behind Enemy Lines. He wants to murder Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson and Gene Hackman, sorry, Trill, were in two movies in 2001 together.
In the sport. Royal Tenenbaums?
Yeah.
Royal Tenenbaums.
Royal Tenenbaums.
God damn it, I should have known that. He's going to be in French Dispatch too, right?
A lot of people forget that Owen Wilson voiced Marmaduke in the Marmaduke movie.
I don't forget.
Oh, I don't forget that.
Might be because we're friends with you, but I don't forget that.
The French, you know, I like Owen Wilson. I like his work with Wes Anderson. I think he fits in those movies well. They got that whole Central Texas vibe locked down pretty tight.
His last live action year was three movies in 2017. Lost in London, where he played himself. I don't remember that movie at all. It looks like a small budget movie with Woody Harrelson. He was in Wonder with Jacob Tremblay and Julia Roberts. That movie actually made a good amount of money. And then he was in that weird Father Figures movie. Where Owen Wilson and Ed Helms couldn't figure out their dads. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. J.K. Simmons was in that. Ving Rhames was in it. Christopher Walken, Glenn Close, Terry Bradshaw.
Who's their mom? Because I remember their mom had a sex with a bunch of people, and that was a joke.
They should do
honestly.
They should do a sequel to Wedding Crashers. Why not?
Why not, right?
They're rebooting everything else. I'm sure you could have some plot line where they're both married. And then they like become divorced dads, and then they resume the wedding crashing business when they're older men.
They have to crash one of their daughter's weddings or something.
I don't think they'd be that old.
Yeah, it's not that old. I don't know. Their niece or nephew or something.
It takes place in the 1600s.
Or maybe just 2 years in the two, four, five, 6 years in the future.
Yeah, 2035.
So that's... That is Loki. Also, we're hearing, I will say, let me add one little nugget for thought here. There's another story that came out from MCU Cosmic saying that the Multiverse of Madness is going to have multiverse, different versions of characters we know potentially, which makes sense. It's a multiverse. We saw that in Spider-Verse. What if Owen Wilson, because we're going to have multiverse and different dimensions in Loki, what if Owen Wilson is playing like a failure, like skinny, kind of weird Thor?
Ooh.
Like in a different dimension.
I was thinking in multiverse it would be played by Luke Wilson.
Who, Thor?
No, Owen Wilson's character in Loki is played by Luke Wilson in multiverse, in the different universe.
I would like that as well. That'd be pretty funny. I can
see
that.
This is hurting my brain. Hold on.
Well, Trey, we'll go to something a little more simple. Sonic. Let's talk Sonic. This week, we're reviewing Gretel and Hansel. The week after that, we're reviewing Birds of Prey, and then Sonic the Hedgehog the week after that. So a few weeks away from Sonic the Hedgehog, he has a big game spot, aka Super Bowl spot. This aired during the Super Bowl. There may or may not have been a full trailer. I forget. It has nothing to do with us recording this beforehand, because we didn't do that. We recorded it live after the Super Bowl. But Sonic has a trailer with a bunch of random athletes. Michael Thomas. I believe, who else is in this?
Christian McCaffrey.
Kyle Busch, Christian McCaffrey, gold medalist Allison
Phoenix.
Felix.
Felix or Phoenix?
Felix.
Felix. Felix, sorry.
Very fast person. This movie, This is a bad spot. This is not a good spot.
What I hope you did is I hope our audience watched this before the Super Bowl, and then when they saw the interviews happening, they announced very obnoxiously at their Super Bowl party, "Yeah, this is a Sonic commercial. Guys, this is the Sonic commercial. He just said rings. That's got to be Sonic."
The one thing that really confuses me about this is where the fuck do they have the money? They reshot the entire fucking movie, and they still have the money for this. They're not reshot, but redid all the CGI for it, and they still have the money to get, like, premier athletes for this Super Bowl spot and to get a Super Bowl spot. Like, what is the final budget on this movie going to be?
Well, it's not like they went huge with the actors in the movie aside from Jim Carrey, right?
Correct. So even that, like, Jim Carrey's budget can't be huge either, but I think the final budget on this movie, with all of the CGI redo and all of that shit, it has to be approaching, like, I don't know, fucking at least $100 million, maybe more, and I don't know if it's going to make
you that. You know what it's approaching? It's approaching an amount that we're never going to really hear.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think this movie will make like $400,000. I'm going to call it.
So its budget right now minus marketing is $95 million. So
I think people are going to go see this. I think it's Sonic.
Folks, you know what, folks? I heard they delayed the date of the release, though, to April 23rd. You know why?
Why?
That's Ramadan. And you got to go fast, Trill.
Oh, boy.
I didn't like that.
I didn't.
That was a good one. Fuck
it. Was very.
I don't know. I just feel bad laughing at a joke based around the high holy day.
I was going to do Lent, but Lent doesn't hit as hard. Like on Fridays from 9 to 9, that's when they're releasing Sonic. No, it just doesn't hit. Sorry.
Let's get to an ad here. This episode brought to you by Manscaped. That's right, folks. Manscaped. Manscaped knows one thing. You gotta groom well. You gotta groom well down below there. This third generation Manscaped trimmer, folks, the Lawnmower 3.0 features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Millions of balls are about to be nick free, folks. Millions were being nicked beforehand. Thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin safe technology. We've been talking about Manscaped and using it for a while. If you like the Lawnmower 2.0, you don't even think about that one anymore. That's how great the Lawnmower 3.0 is and their skin-safe technology.
Amazing.
When I tell you it's premium, it is very good. Battery lasts up to 90 minutes. You can take along, which 90 minutes in the time of a razor, that's a long time. They've also upgraded to 7,000 RPM motor with quiet stroke technology. That just sounds advanced. If you're listening to me speak right now, you're one of the first people to hear about this life-changing product. We want you to experience it firsthand. So get 20% off free shipping, plus free shipping, excuse me, with the code LIGHTS, L-I-G-H-T-S, at manscaped.com. And as always, your balls will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LIGHTS, L-I-G-H-T-S, at manscaped.com. 20% off of free shipping at manscaped.com. Okay.
Is that your Hitachi magic wand?
No, I'm just manscaping.
Okay.
I got a tarp on the floor. Just gonna roll it up like a Dexter scene and just throw it in the trash.
All right, let's move on. Next up, how about a dark version of Pee-wee's Big Adventure? Paul Reubens wants to make a dark Pee-wee Herman movie. He would like the Safdie brothers to direct. In a much larger profile on Reubens, THR, the Hollywood Reporter, revealed the actor wants to make a film called Pee-wee Herman's Story, and it would be a much different, darker look at things.
But Pee-wee's Big Adventure was kind of dark, right? At least for, like, comparing that to his kids' TV show. I mean, it was directed by Tim Burton, and then the large Marge scene was pretty terrifying. Was that one, or was that the other Pee-wee movie?
I honestly forget.
I don't know. They kind of blur in together for me. So I don't really know. But it's fine. Like Pee-wee had that. He had a moment a few years ago. Didn't he have like a live tour show and people got back into Pee-wee and everything? And
I actually saw Pee-wee live at Conan O'Brien's tour after he got booted from NBC. Oh. He did a tour and I saw Pee-wee came in the crowd and with Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert at Radio City. That was the last time I saw Pee-wee Herman in anything.
I've never watched a Pee Wee Herman show or movie ever. And I don't think I ever want to, because I only ever heard about him like later in life. And then like I watched a clip of him doing the voice and I was like, this is not for me. And then I read about him jerking off in a movie theater. And then I was like, this is definitely not for me.
Pee-wee's Big Top Adventure was the first movie I think that our internet provider allowed us to download when we got internet for the first time. My family.
What a ride.
Pee-wee was very instrumental in my childhood. I was a big Pee-wee Herman fan. It was a very popular thing, I think, for kids that were born in 84, 85. So I've always liked Pee-wee, but then like you get older and you kind of like look at it and you're like, well, this kind of was like, there's a very, I don't want to call it creepy, but there's just a very, detached, almost like sinister element to the show. Cause you got like talking chair and you got things that would probably be perceived as like weird as an adult, but as a child, you're like, oh, it's just a talking chair. And so I can see, it wasn't overtly that way, but I can definitely see a much darker Pee-wee movie working out, because I don't think it's too much of a stretch on the source material. And I always think like Pee-wee was kind of like one of those creations that I think the character was meant to be like a little bit darker when it was created. And then, you know, some studio exec were like, oh, this is a kid's thing for sure. And I'm a fucking idiot. And they just went with that.
I don't know if it was the timing of my childhood for me.
It was.
I guess.
I think it was a very specific moment in time, because the Pee Wee Herman show, let me look it up. Pee Wee Herman show.
I mean, when I grew up, I long confused, back in 2001, I confused Alan Cumming and Spy Kids as Pee Wee Herman, as Paul Rubens, his character.
Similar vibe.
Fegan Floop? It was probably based off of
the weird thumb creatures and all the weird big sets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Pee-wee's Playhouse. So Pee-wee's Playhouse ran 86 to 90. So it was like a very specific 4 to 5 year old me who would enjoy Pee-wee's Playhouse. And a lot of people forget Lawrence Fishburne was in this show.
I will say, I think it'd be okay in my book if the Safdie brothers did something else.
Yeah. Focus your efforts elsewhere, please.
They should do something else. Cause I think Paul Rubens got the Pee-wee character down. I think he has a idea of what to do with Pee-wee. And I don't think you need the Safdie brothers' vision to guide Pee-wee in the direction that maybe he wants to go.
Make it a Blumhouse movie.
Yes. That seems like a Blumhouse decision. Kevin Smith famously said, when offered a chance to write a Beetlejuice sequel, he said, haven't we said all there is to say about Beetlejuice? That's how I feel about Pee-wee.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Rubens, though, is 67. Like, just a 70-year-old Pee-wee is that fucking creeps me out.
I never grew up. He also makes a cameo in Star Wars Family Guy. He steals his bike gets stolen in Return of the Jedi. Though I would believe that was not Paul Rubens.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Eminem did the Pee Wee Herman voice and Just Lose It?
Yes.
Almost everything he does. He constantly does that voice.
An awfully hot coffee pot.
No, but for a while he did the accent because he got bored of rhyming in a conventional type accent. He could do different rhymes with that. It was almost like a vaguely Eastern European type accent he used for an entire 2-album run. But that one song, he just had that line about Pee-wee Herman and then decided to do the Pee-wee Herman laugh. And people were like, okay, this is a Billboard Top 100 song. Easy. Fine. It's 2005. We don't have any fucking standards.
Zero.
Matilda. Who likes the movie Matilda from the story from Roald Dahl? Well,
I love Matilda.
The Netflix adaptation of the musical, Ralph Fiennes might be playing Miss Trunchbull.
What?
Folks.
Yeah.
So did you guys ever watch the musical Matilda?
No.
So in the musical, a guy usually does play Mrs. Trunchbull. So like
in drag?
Yeah. Okay. So like when I went to go see it, it was just like a 6-foot-2 dude wearing like just like a girl outfit and like prosthetics and shit. And it was very funny. It's one of the better musicals I've ever seen. So it's not like a crazy thing. And I actually think he could play a Trunchbull really well. He's like that mentality down to like pat.
Yeah, it's probably, I don't know. I mean, that's fine. I like that idea, actually. I feel like that's like, do you ever think about like when they have to hire, like they have to do casting for really like disgusting characters from like books and stuff like that. And what those casting calls like might be is like looking for an absolutely disgusting human being, mm-hmm. physically hideous. And then you read the paper and you're like, well, I guess that's me.
Mm-hmm. Someone who would self-describe as pure filth.
Yeah, you like read the Hollywood Reporter, wherever they put those casting calls out. Well, I'm sure they do it online, whatever. But you're like, I'm an ugly person, and this I'm gonna go audition for this shit.
It's smart. I mean, there's a vein for those sort of character actors. But I actually got a report from a good friend of the podcast, folks, Buddy Pounds. He works hair and makeup for the production, and he gave me a report.
The prosthetics for this movie are divine. One look at the makeup done on Reeve's toes, and I want to rename him from Trunchbull to Suckable.
Well, thanks for that insight.
Okay, that was something. let's go to one more piece of news before we talk about National Treasure 3.
Suckable.
I was going to say fuckable, but suckable.
Actually, Trill, behind you, we have... Hey, come on over here. Come on in.
Oh, wow. What?
Andrew John Hosier Byrne, a.k.a. Hosier.
Hosier? I'm a huge fan. In 2014, he took us to church.
I mean, I'm used to, holding onto a guitar and stuff and having something to do with my hands.
Are you going
to
ask him, Trill?
Hey, okay. I'm the biggest Hosier fan. And I just got to what I know you hate hearing this, Hosier. I've asked this to Gautier, and he said yes. All right, but can you just give us a little bit of Take Me to Church, just a little bit, please?
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Yeah. Look at that. Hosier's gonna do the song.
All right, folks. Here we go. A little bit of Take Me to Church from Hosier. Take it away.
Take me to church. I'll worship like a dog at the shrine of your lies. I'll tell you my sins, and you can show up and you're not. Offer me that deathless death and good God. Let me give you my life.
That was fantastic. Wow. How about that? Two shows in a row, we got a live performance. Right, get on out of here.
hey, Hosier, can I ask you one thing? I hear 2020. I hear you're going to be dropping Take Me to Church too.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll keep it secret. All right. Okay. Take care. Enjoy the Super Bowl, man.
Taking the carpool lane there.
Last bit of news. How about Linda Hamilton? Linda Hamilton would love to be done with Sarah Connor. It sounds like the Terminator franchise, even the originals, are saying this is it. According to Screen Rant, in a recent interview, Hamilton revealed that she isn't interested in coming back for another Terminator film. Hamilton explained that she doesn't think future films should have millions of dollars in the line, that she doesn't want to return, saying it should definitely not be such a high-risk financial venture, but I would be quite happy to never return. And so, no, I am not hopeful of a return because I would really love to be done.
That's fair. That's fair in my opinion. She's done her time for this franchise. She came back. The movie sucked. I would never want to be part of it again. But on the other hand, money. So maybe I would.
I think this is either – this can be two things at the same time, simultaneously. A very truthful statement on what she feels about the Terminator franchise, and also a very shrewd negotiating tactic.
And see, that's what I'm saying with the money thing.
Yeah. So it could just be like, look, I hate this shit, and if you want to bring me back, you gotta pay me.
Arnold's been doing the meets for like $100,000.
Arnold's like, yeah, whatever. I will do it. I am the Terminator. While Linda Hamilton's like, this is a fucking mess. This franchise is a mess. But honestly, we didn't like hate the last one, right?
No, we didn't at all. I didn't hate it.
So I feel like she's more so just being truthful with saying, there's really nowhere else to go. We've manipulated the timeline so much. We played with it every which way. The story stays the same. John Connor's important. He either gets saved or he doesn't. That either leads into the inevitability of the Skynet destroying the world sooner than later. Eventually, everything's fucked. Whether it's going to be in 1999 or whether it's going to be in 2019 or whether it's going to be in 2040, the Terminator universe is fucked because Skynet's going to figure it out one way or the other. So how many different variations can you do on that?
Space. Every franchise needs to go to space eventually. By the time you hit, I think, like, number 7 in your franchise, you just got to go there.
I mean, maybe, like, they finally do the Terminator versus Alien crossover.
Exactly.
Where you leave Earth, like, Earth, like, maybe 200 years in the future, Skynet's like, okay, like, we got it. We figured it out. We got a plan to destroy humanity. You put it off for 200 years, and you got this technology for space travel, and it's like, we've got to recolonize somewhere else because Skynet's just going to take Earth. So you put a bunch of people on a colony ship, and then Skynet's on it still, and then Skynet and the Terminators are trying to destroy the aliens because the aliens are now the existential threat to Skynet.
Where's Predator in all this?
A Predator could be there too. Aliens versus Terminator versus Predator. If not a movie, I want this video game.
Maybe Matrix too. Like, Skynet needs to fuel their power cells with human bodies.
Skynet versus Alien versus Predator versus the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else to add in there?
Men in Black.
Avenue 5. Let's tie that in there. The ship on Avenue 5 is the ship they take.
Yes, there. Done. We just made a $1 billion franchise right there.
And you're telling me Linda Hamilton wouldn't want to be a part of this shit?
Oh, 100%. Yeah,
she would. Yeah. She wouldn't have fucking fired that rocket launcher down the maw of an alien.
Mm-hmm.
A rule. You get that acid blood splash everywhere on the Terminator. Its skin is decomposing and they're just firing off a chain gun.
Mm-hmm. Cypher's there. Joe Pantoliano, okay. That Cypher.
All right. Well, how about this? Like, the Arnold's Terminator has the alien, like, and he's gripping the alien's, like, jaws like this, trying not to get, like, crushed by the alien. Mm-hmm. And then out of nowhere, a blue streak comes and just explodes the alien. All right, just a spinning blue ball. And the Terminator looks over.
It's Luke Wilson, and where else is in blue streak?
It's Sonic.
Martin Lawrence.
It's Sonic, and Sonic's there, too. And then a sword gets tossed out of nowhere. Sonic grabs it and looks over, and it's Link from Zelda.
We're turning it into Game Master Anthony's birthday, and I still think it'll make so much money.
Rule. Rule.
I don't know if anything else on this one. Also, Jesus Rolls, the spinoff of Big Lebowski, had its first teaser, but nothing really happened, so not much to talk about there. Do you think Big Lebowski, do you think the dude is going to be in the movie?
Probably at some point. What else is Jeff Bridges up to?
I feel like he would, I mean, would Jeff Bridges say no to that? Like,
he did the commercial, the Stellar Atoll one.
Yeah, yeah, I don't think he would say no to that.
No, like a small, short cameo, why not?
Yeah, and then what else? Oh yeah, Tinkerbell. Margot Robbie is apparently being approached to play Tinkerbell.
Mm.
Tinkerbell's a character I've never enjoyed.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a Tinkerbell
Didn't expect
guy.
A hot take on Tinkerbell.
I'm just not a Peter Pan guy in general. I the only adaptation of Peter Pan I've ever really enjoyed is Hook. I like the take on that version of the Peter Pan story.
All right, that's fair.
The old ass Peter Pan. By old ass, I mean my age now.
That's fair. I like that. I'm into that. I'm into that. All right. You want to talk about National Treasure? Timeless said 3. National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets?
Let's do it.
I don't really, but yeah.
Oh, well, that's just the worst attitude I've heard.
Okay, I do. I'm sorry. I'm just watching another fucking clip of the Immaculate Reception on the Fox pregame show. If there's any play worth talking about, it's definitely the Immaculate Reception.
Look, I understand that a lot of things have happened before our lifetime of football, but the fact that the only two plays considered the greatest of anything this whole NFL season being the Immaculate Reception and the catch, the Dwight Clark, like, seriously?
Yeah.
Like, Odell Beckham's catch versus the Cowboys was way better than the Immaculate Reception.
Like, I guess you need to put it into two different camps, right? Like, the meaningfulness of the catch.
Yes, for versus, sure.
Which, like, that's really fair. But, like, pound for pound, like, just pure talent involved in the catch, like, OBJ blows it out of the water, like, so hard.
But, like, are we really going to say, like, I mean, the Steelers don't win the Super Bowl if James Harrison doesn't return that touchdown. Like, they
– yeah.
Like, I know that wasn't the winning – I mean, the Santonio Holmes catch might have been the better catch. I
would say so.
That's kind of irked me. And I'm caping for the fuck. That's how you know I'm caping for the Steelers. So I guess also against the Steelers because the Immaculate Reception is the most important thing in Pittsburgh. It's in the fucking airport. There's a statue when you land in Pittsburgh of Franco Harris. And he's actually next to George Washington. George Washington statue next to it is Franco Harris catching the football.
But look, I'm not, I don't want to be a Franco Harris hater, but that wasn't like a display of athleticism. That was simply just being in the right place at the right time.
It was the definition of right place, right time.
I mean, that is a very circumstantial play. And so, yeah, I'm right with you, Ken Jack. I think in order to have the NFL's top plays, you have to have two categories. Mm-hmm. You have to have most meaningful plays to the outcome of an NFL season. And then you have to have most impressive feats of athleticism. And on there, you would have something like the Randy Moss draped with five people lateraling back to somebody else. Because that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Yeah. Maybe like
it didn't mean anything.
Importance versus impressiveness. I don't know. Like there definitely has to be like just a separate branch for that.
Call me a millennial, but I'm tired of hearing about the old NFL. And I'm very glad that teams never really seem to be pressing up on the 16-0 stuff anymore. Like they, you know, they were like a few years ago, because that just cuts the airtime for those dreaded 72 Dolphins.
Mm-hmm. You know how
sick we used to, like, when the Colts would always go like 11-0, when the Patriots would go 11-0, and then you start like having the 72 Dolphins on First Take, and they're like, "Well, what are you guys thinking?" And they're like, "Well, that's not going to happen." And then every time the team lost, it's like the 72 Dolphins, and this is always what they say: they're popping the champagne bottles.
Uh-huh. They legitimately would. They would celebrate.
There's Larry Zonka at home just popping a fucking champagne bottle. Like, I don't care. I don't care. Everyone, every single person on this team is better than every single person on the 70 whatever Dolphins.
Yeah, call me back when the 72 Dolphins play against 6'5" defensive ends who can run a 4.6 40.
National Treasure 2. This came out in 2007. This is the movie that sparked everyone to say, "Where's the third?" Because of the end. We'll get to the end. Ben Gates and his father Patrick are surprised by Mitch Wilkinson's claims that their ancestor was a conspirator in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln based on the missing page of Booth's diary that he possesses. Outraged, together with his wife, Abigail, and his best friend, the writer Riley Poole, they head to France, England, and Washington to collect clues to prove his honor and find the city of gold. 36% of Rotten Tomatoes from this movie, 2 hours and 11 minutes long. The only real difference in terms of cast is you add Helen Mirren. Helen Mirren plays the mother of Ben Gates. You add Ed Harris, who plays the villain, the antagonist, because villains, it's a villain at times. Mitch Wilkinson, and then Ty Burrell's in the movie.
He is.
Ty Burrell's in this movie.
Phil Dunphy himself.
Must know Justin Bartha back as Riley.
Yes, King.
National Treasure, Book of Secrets. I enjoy Book of Secrets for what it is. Can we agree on that, right?
Sure.
The fun of it is there. This movie is a significant step down from the first one. I think it's a pretty major step down in quality. And at least in terms of the way it flows, and I hate using the word believability because, I mean, obviously the whole thing's a stretch to begin with, but there are some stretches in this movie. There are some major stretches in this movie that make you go, really? Like, huh? Like, that's how that works?
Yeah. Well, you know how when we were coming up with the plots for the third one, we did the audience questions and someone had that thing of they wanted to do, what was it?
Atlantis. And then they said that.
Well, but it was the Roanoke thing. And then I said, I don't think that's big enough. This movie's the best counter argument for going too big. Don't you guys think? Because it's almost like, okay, it's a sequel. We got to try to top the first one. We got to throw in some international intrigue to it. But what it comes out is it comes out like more disconnected and more of a mess than the first one. And that leads into not as much of a satisfying movie. So I think this movie is the best argument for keeping the third one relatively simple and maybe more compact in terms of scale, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would agree. I would give this a 64. Excuse me. What would you give it, Trill?
I'd give it a 55. I thought it was fine. I've like the first one when I rewatched it, I'm like, I'm really enjoying this. I forgot how much I enjoyed it. And this one felt like you got to about the, you know, cause this is a 2 hour movie. It felt like you got halfway through it and you're kind of just like, oh, let's just wrap it up. Like I get it. It almost seems like I want to do some sort of analytical study on like what the right amount of characters to have is, or things like that. But then you add like Helen Mirren and you add Ed Harris. And it, I don't think Ed Harris was stronger than Sean Bean. And I don't think Helen Mirren really like added much to, I don't think we really need to know more about the character of Ben Gates, quite honestly. Like, I think he's a very generic character and I don't need to meet his mom. Right. Like, we already met his dad. We already know like his family is like from a long lineage of assassins, like Assassin's Creed, but then replace assassins with Treasure Hunter. Anything beyond that, it's like I want the story more to be like the quest, the secrets, the intrigue. And I think they did some of that, but it wasn't as, you know how I said last time with the first one, is like you're following along and it kind of makes you feel like the smartest dumb guy in the world. Mm-hmm. I like feeling like that. And this one almost just was too much.
No, I totally agree with you. I gave it a 55 as well. I definitely think they kind of struck out with the Ed Harris character only because I think they tried to make him three-dimensional, which like in a sense it kind of works, but in a larger sense, I don't think it did. Like, I don't feel at the end of the movie where I was like, damn, he was actually a good guy the whole time. I'm like, no, he was just kind of an asshole that was hiring thugs and shooting, mowing people down in the streets of London. Like, he's a bad guy. And I don't feel like at any point I felt like empathetic towards him and his problem whatsoever. I agree with you, Trill, that Helen Mirren really didn't add much to this movie at all. And I think that was supposed to be a bigger moment. And this definitely kind of lost, I think, track of the fact that the quest is the important part. Like, you do want to be following along and feel like you're part of this journey with them. And this is more like an exploration of Ben Gates' lineage. And like, I mean, Ben Gates is, I think, a cool character, but like, he's not cool enough where I'm like, I really want to know more about his background and his lineage. And I want him to clear his name. Like, I don't care as much about that as I do about the actual quest that's happening. And I want that to take precedence over actually, you know, exploring more about Ben Gates' lineage. So that was kind of a bummer. I think the jokes still hit a lot of them. Like when he goes to France and like meets the other guys and Riley's getting jealous and Riley not being recognized by anybody. Like, that's all funny to me. And like their weird relationship between Diane Kruger and Nick Cage, I think was funny as well. But it feels like they redid a lot of what happened in the original to a lesser effect. And the stuff that the big thing that they tried to like explore more is the lineage, and the lineage just is not what I think was intriguing for me.
What was your score, B?
55 as well.
Okay, yeah. And then the audience gave it a 67, so significantly lower than the previous movie, which I believe we had in the 80s. Yeah, we had it in an 80. This one comes out to be a 60.25. That's below Rat Race and above B Movie. We will be doing a box office game, but it's going to be a bit of a special version. We'll be doing it after the review here. Let's stick with what you were talking about, Ken Jack, in terms of the lineage, because I feel like that's a big question. Do you think it's a little convoluted, the whole backstory of Ben Gates' father and the Lincoln assassination, or a great, great, great grandfather and the Lincoln assassination and his relation to John Wilkes Booth and the page and clearing his family's name? Because I was looking around at like general questions that people have about this movie. And I think for the most part, confusion was a big thing. Cause I don't think the first one ever got confusing. Not to say this one was like a Christopher Nolan movie, like trying to fuck with your brain, but there's a couple points where you're like, really? And you got to take leaps. Like people talking about the page, they're like, Mitch Wilkinson add his name? Like his great-great-granddad's name to the page? They're like, no, like it was probably on there as like they needed to go talk to him. Then they're saying, what did Ben Gates know about Mitch Wilkinson that made him know that Mitch needed to find the Lost City Gold? All these things. Do you think it was a little too convoluted? And did you have any questions at any point, even when you first saw this about the movie?
I walked away and I definitely thought that they tried to, like I said before with the Ed Harris character, I think they tried to make him too three-dimensional and make you try and like question a lot of that like relationship between their two characters and their two families and stuff. And for me, it's like, it wasn't necessarily just convoluted, which I do think it was, but it was just like not cool enough to be part of the story. Like, it wasn't interesting enough to me where I'm like, damn, I really want to know more about this. And I think that's maybe my bigger overall problem with the, Wilkinson's character?
Yeah, because like at one point when they find the city of gold, he mentions that comedy. He's like, I'm sorry I did this, but I needed you to come with me and I knew that this would spark. Like, you needed to do this? Like, this elaborate, like cat and mouse chase across continents. And
like, this guy literally stole the fucking Declaration of Independence. You think you couldn't just ask him and he would do it?
Yeah, but like, hey, by the way, look what I found. This may be damning to your grandfather or your great-great. I'm gonna keep saying grandfather. I'm sorry. Your great-great-great-grandfather. Like, you should come with me and find it. We can clear his name as well as my family name. I feel like he would probably say yes.
Yeah, exactly. He'd say yes to any of that.
And I really hate nitpicking it, but I feel like we almost have to, because again, there was there were some leaps you have to take with the first one, but we were very complimentary of it as to why it worked so well. And I think that's why this one falls apart a bit. Because again, that last line, like, that gets me. It's you had to fuck with him in public and chase him and like basically shoot at him in order for him to do it. Like, this guy definitely would have gone with you. Had you just been like, hey, man, your dad's on this page. I found this. I'll help you out. Let's do this together. You'd be like, yeah, sure. We'll go find the city of gold.
Had to fucking roast him in a public panel and then try and shoot him in the streets of London. It's absurd.
Basically stood up like, him. Hey, you're a big Lincoln guy, right? Yeah, your granddad, I think, killed Lincoln, you fuck. It's like, what the hell? Like, what a crazy thing to do just because you want the guy to come with you on a treasure hunt. I think that character is probably the biggest issue with this movie.
And again, he would have said yes. Like, if you just asked him, no matter what, he would have said yes. You could be like, hey, I found fucking a sheepskin condom George Washington used in 1776. Like, he'd go find it. You could ask him to do anything. He would go and do it. This guy literally stole the fucking Declaration of Independence. Like, come on.
Also, people have wondered, this is another question. I actually found a place that just had a bunch of questions in the movie. It says, why does Ben need to find the city gold to beat the kidnap charge? The president's story of we got trapped and he saved my life would just have worked as well without the discovery, which is true. I mean, Captain Pike from Star Trek could have just been like, yeah, we got – I mean, it was very believable. I don't feel like he needed to do that. But again, this movie – you got to take leaps with this movie, which, again, I think there's a few too many to make it to let me give it a pass, Trill. I think that's the thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the big thought of this movie is I think it does fall in that sequel trap, like I was saying. And what I'm saying by that is, you know, sequels always have to do with something bigger. They have to have this pressure to surpass the first. And I think typically when that happens, they forget what makes the first good and why people wanted a sequel to begin with. And the shit you're talking about is like exactly on the mark. I think that's the difference between the second movie and the first movie is like, you know, they try to capture the essence of the first one, but by doing that, it's like, well, let's do with the first one what we did, but let's like just do more of it. And sometimes what people want is just like the same thing, but just slightly different, right?
The stakes need to be larger. We need to go overseas. Like, not really.
Because you find that, and like, I actually think for me, a lot of the most exciting stuff happened leading up to the discovery. Like, I like them in England. Like, I like them underneath the desk. I thought that was cool. Anything that is fake, but they make it believable with this franchise, that's the shit I like. Because when they get to the City of Gold, like, I just didn't find that interesting.
Yeah.
Like, when they're down there and they're on that big platform trying to balance it, because at least when they find the treasure in the first National Treasure, they don't really find it right away, right? Like, he thinks it's the dead end, and then he has the pipe. He puts the little end of the pipe in, and it opens the door, and they find all the treasure. That's an exciting part as well, where this one kind of feels like a bit of a dud. Also, the movie had no idea how to end either.
Yep.
None. Because this movie should have ended right with the book, page 47. Mm-hmm. That's where, like, that'd have been a great, and then Riley, which we'll get to Riley. We got to talk Riley. We just have to talk Riley Poole. Is that his name? Riley Poole?
Yeah, Riley Poole. Okay. That's a big treasure hunter book.
So you have Riley, and then they're back together, blah, blah, blah. But let's just talk about Riley Poole. Do we like Riley more in this one, or do we like him in the first one? I think Riley was a little improved in this one.
Yeah, he definitely got more, like, I think he was funnier, for sure. The tax evasion thing made me laugh a lot.
It seemed like more competent, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't a dipshit, which he's a smart guy too, right? Like, that's part of the draw of his character, is he knows things and he's tech. Like, I liked him teching up in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. And him knowing shit, he's like, yeah, I can do this in 25 seconds. And him knowing stuff from his book too, because he did all the research with it.
His scene in England as well was accompanied by the stairwell freakout.
Yes.
I don't know how we feel about that.
Oh,
the stairwell
man.
Freakout is such a classic Nick Cage moment, and I guess it fits in with the character, and it played better than I had remembered, because it's kind of integral to the plot and he's doing it on purpose. But is that too much Nick Cagey? Because we didn't get too much Nick Cagey in the first one. And this one is him doing his screaming, yelling accents and weird shit
type. Overacted shit. Yes, for sure. Definitely this is too much of a Nick Cagey moment. They should have toned it down a little. A little. Like 25% less would have been sufficient. And it would still be like still hit the same mark, I think.
I kind of liked it. I thought it added color to the monotony. So maybe monotonous is the bad word. But I feel like when there's a lot of noise, it's like you can't pick up any one distinct noise. It's just a mishmash of them all. Mm-hmm. And then that is kind of just like one monotonous tone to you. Like that's what this felt like. It just felt like a lot of stuff. And then that was at least something that felt somewhat notable in the noise of everything else. And only from an entertainment perspective, maybe not for a fit of the movie. So maybe my answer is I enjoy the Nick Cage stuff because I enjoy the Nick Cage stuff. But it didn't serve the movie, right? It just was, hey, like, do what people want you to do, right?
So I guess up to that point, it was getting a little, maybe not monotonous, but boring. And that definitely did, like, you know, wake you back up. Like, if you were starting to be like, oh, I'm getting uninterested, which at least for me, I was definitely maybe at that point, I was like, oh boy, let's go watch a Cage freakout. Because now we're going to get at least something a little more entertaining, even if it wasn't purposeful.
Do we think I'm going to kidnap the president? Was their attempt at recreating the line if I'm going to steal?
Yes.
Someone said on the Lights, Camera, Barstool, right? The line just doesn't quite hit the same.
No.
It just doesn't quite work as well.
I think it was a little self-aware. Like, they did the zoom in and everything, and everyone was like, well, no. Like, I think they were a little self-aware, but it wasn't enough where it hit, you know, as a funny line.
Well, I just feel like that is, in terms of the believability, I feel like if you really wanted to, in this movie universe, you could steal the Declaration of Independence. Like, that team, knowing what they know. But I feel like kidnapping the president in this movie universe, that's just not believable. Can't do that. No one would be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he kind of like gets the party to be, I think he gets the party moved there, right? To Mount Vernon. Yeah, just another one that's
very lucky. Again, the president happened to also be a big nerd.
Yeah, I mean, this whole his great great grandfather is a co-conspirator in the Lincoln assassination. If the president does not like maps.
Well, if you like your treasure, you can keep it.
I didn't like how they looped the Lincoln assassination in this. Like, and I know they're like trying to do that Assassin's Creed thing, or like Assassin's Creed is doing this thing of like at every phase in the major elements of American history, like this conspiracy light type thing has been present and a key motivator in the happening of stuff. But it fits in more with like the development of the country in the revolutionary period and kind of like that era than it does like the actual Civil War, post-Civil War period. Am I just picking nits?
No, I don't think you are, because I do think that's a big part of it that just doesn't quite work as well.
Because then you're just like, okay, so like what was this, what was happening during World War II? Like, aren't there more modern clues you can examine if like this has been a key motivator?
Do like OSS or something. There's like plenty of stuff you could talk about. Do Monuments Men, except loop it in.
And I get the feeling that they do the third, it might be looking at like that particular timeline, or maybe, I don't think they have the balls to do the JFK assassination, even though that would be fucking like just a mess. Like that would be a nightmare. You could never be able to do that. But like, that would be like the next, I think, like, you know, if you're doing the Lincoln one, that would be the next phase of the conspiracy you'd want to try to like loop into it in terms of just major moments and like the jaw-dropping history of the country.
For a Disney movie, this is the one Disney movie I think I've ever heard where they walk up to an Aztec table and Nick Cage goes, yeah, this is where the throats were slit and the hearts were taken out. The very Disney line by our good boy Nick.
How about have you ever been pulled over by a traffic camera? Or not pulled over. Have you got a ticket from a traffic camera before?
Yeah.
Do you think you'd be able to read something that you hold up in your car windshield? How crystal clear was that picture?
Maybe in 2020, but definitely not in 2007.
No chance.
Can we call that the biggest leap of the movie? Very well might have been.
It was like the CSI, like zoom in on the license plate type thing from a, you know,
computer enhance.
Yeah, enhance. No, but like they read license plates from cars for like toll tag stuff in certain states.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
So like maybe a sign isn't too far of a stretch, but like that. So I don't think that I don't know 2007, but I mean that honestly is one of the more believable things in this movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Takes a picture with his flip phone too.
Oh boy.
Yep. The flip phones and the copy.
It was a razor too. I think it was a razor.
I think it was a Crazer.
Was it?
Might have been. I'm not sure. But it was definitely a flip phone of that variety.
Before we wrap up here, just want to note we're given here because we're in Dylan's Candy Bar. Trill just got a Sour Lover's Tackle Box from Dylan's Candy Bar. Ken Jack got a Chocolate Lover's Tackle Box. $26 each here at Dylan's Candy Bar in the Aventura Mall in Miami, Florida. Trill, you're a big Dylan's Candy Bar fan.
I am. I like it because, you know, the name, right? It's a candy bar, like where you get a bunch of candy. But then also, like it's like a play on the phrase candy bar. I mean,
brilliant.
I mean, go try to replicate that. You couldn't.
Straight from the very famous and successful Loren family, claims to be the largest candy store in the world. Very good to be in here,
Papa. Oh no, it's not the largest. Is it the largest candy store in the world?
Claims to be.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, I can't think of any other candy store that would be the largest in the world.
Dylan Loren founded it in 2001 after seeing Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory on her sixth birthday.
Oh my God. Imagine being that rich.
Money is cool.
I like Willy Wonka. Let's just make it a candy store.
Money is very cool. Anything else on National Treasure, Book of Secrets? I think we've covered quickly, but we've covered the basis of why this just doesn't work as well as the second. I think Riley is better. Riley's a better character in this one.
I think they made an improvement to his character. I thought Nick Cage was more or less the same. I thought people were more or less the same, but I didn't like Ed Harris more than I liked Sean Bean. I thought that going bigger with it was not the right thing to do. And now I'm kind of after rewatching this, I'm really reevaluating what I want out of a third National Treasure.
Last question. Yeah. What do you want now that you've watched both these again? What do you want out of the next one? I don't want treasure. Like maybe finding a thing, but I don't want like this big treasure find again. We've found two big treasures. Like let's find... it needs to be connected to the Book of Secrets. It has to be what's related to page 47.
Jimmy Hoffa's grave.
Yeah, just find Hoffa.
Yeah, I would like if that Book of Secrets led him to something else entirely. Like maybe some revelatory information that they're being tracked down for, that they're trying to like get out and make known. Or like maybe him exposing something for the sake of humanity, like the existence of aliens.
So the tough thing with the with 47
Area 51.
Is that.
Area 51. We're going to go into Area 51. We got to figure that out.
He wants to go to that page. Riley does. Oh, Area 51, mm-hmm. Area 51. Which if you're why you got it. You have like 2 seconds to stay on that page. You got to read that page.
Just read it.
Okay. It's also been 13 years too. So keep that in mind. It's a different president now too when this movie's going to take place.
What year did the Roswell incident happen?
54?
1947. Page 47. Mm-hmm. I Disney.
That's hot.
I've done it. I've done it again.
What if that's all the movie is? He's like, well, Mr. President, Roswell happened in 47. Page 47. That's what it means.
Oh, maybe there's a reoccurring alien visit every 100 years on the 47th year of the century. Maybe that's like the thing.
Yeah. And that's
this movie actually set in 2047 then?
Yeah, there we go. Blade Runner 2047.
National Treasure 2047. He's still finding treasure.
Oh, boy. I don't know, man.
Harvey Keitel is like 130 years old as the FBI guy still.
The hologram.
I don't know. I kind of like the going back, like, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say, right? It's like one of those things where it all comes back to we're still consumers, and as consumers, we still really don't know what we want until it's in front of us. So I can't tell you, but what I can tell you is like what I see with my eyes and what I prefer. I didn't like that as much.
We're idiots. That's what matters.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right, so that's National Treasure 2. Falls pretty far down the list of movies we've reviewed. 60 out of 100 is the aggregate score. We'll figure out what we're going to do next week later on in this week. We'll go back to Netflix, Disney Plus or something. Somebody suggested we watch a Ben Stiller classic, and I kind of want to watch it.
Oh, Mystery Men, yeah.
But I don't know if Mystery Men is streaming anywhere. Mystery Men is on Stars.
I think it's coming to somewhere soon. I remember blogging about it.
Maybe we'll wait then. I would like Mystery Men would be a fun one. You know what would be another fun one to do? I think. I don't know. I always forget which of the two of you will be happy or disappointed with this. And that's The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, I hate that movie.
I kind of want to do that.
I've seen that movie 1,000 times. I hate it.
That one's on Stars as well, though, so that one's tough.
It's so bad. Fucking didn't – what's his name? Sean Connery refused to do Lord of the Rings because he wanted to be in that.
It's a classic movie.
Pretty sure. God damn.
We should actually do League of Extraordinary Gentlemen before we review Invisible Man because he is in this movie.
Hmm.
That would make sense. All right. You want to do box office game?
Let's do it.
A little twist here. Top five highest grossing football movies of all time.
Oh, God. Do we have a list of that somewhere?
I have it.
Fuck. All right. We got to find it.
I'm just going to look for top football movies.
Well, don't do that because then you may actually find the – just Google football movies.
Let's see. Top 25 best football movies.
So top five highest grossing football movies.
The Blind Side.
Draft Day.
Of all time.
Do the Blind Side first.
All right. Let's get in order here. Is that your first guess, Blind Side?
Yes.
That is correct. Blind Side is the highest grossing football movie of all time.
Yeah.
You're one for one. Good start.
Not Radio.
No, definitely not. Waterboy, maybe? Waterboy or Replacements, one of those two.
Does Jerry Maguire count?
Jerry Maguire, I have a list in front of me. For what it's worth, I have a list of 15 in front of me. Jerry Maguire is on the list. It does count.
Do Jerry Maguire, why not?
And do Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire is number two.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Varsity Blues? I think that made money, didn't it?
Does The Waterboy count?
The Waterboy, that's a football movie, yeah.
Okay, I'm just making sure. Yeah, The Waterboy.
The Waterboy is number four. So you're three for three, and you have three strikes.
All right, Kenjack, you go.
I don't think We Are Marshall made money yet. I don't think Concussion made money. Maybe Varsity Blues, what do you think?
I think Remember the Titans.
Remember the Titans. Yeah, do that. Remember the Titans.
Remember the Titans is incorrect. Number six highest grossing football movie of all time. Remember the Titans.
Hmm.
Rudy, what do you think? I don't think Rudy made comparable money.
I think Any Given Sunday would be over Rudy.
Yeah, why not? Any Given Sunday.
Any Given Sunday is incorrect. That's number seven highest grossing football movie. So you have one strike left and you got to get two movies. You guys have not lost in months.
We're playing too fast and loose.
Yeah, you're going a little too quick here.
Oh, fuck.
Not easy, though. This is definitely one of the tougher ones in a while because there have been a couple real easy ones lately.
I wonder if the 2005 Longest Yard would be, Ken Jack.
Fuck. How much money do you think that made, though?
I don't know.
Folks, that's the point of the game.
How much money did the number one make?
I don't know what you have in front of you, though.
I'm just looking at a list of football movies.
I just have pictures of football movies.
The highest grossing football movie of all time was $309 million, The Blind Side.
Okay. I mean, Longest Yard probably made at least, $100 million or something.
Let's just go for it. If we're wrong, we lose.
Longest Yard is correct. The third highest grossing football movie of all time. So it's The Blind Side, Jerry Maguire, The Longest Yard, Waterboy, and then you're missing number five. You have number six and seven, but those don't count. Remember the Titans in Any Given Sunday. So you have one more guess. Last guess. Sudden Death.
Oh, boy. Oh,
maybe The Replacements. How much do you think that made?
I don't know, man. I mean, there's Friday Night Lights. Friday Night Lights.
Leatherheads?
No.
Leatherheads stinks, but it might have made money. I have no idea.
I don't think it made money.
Brian Song, definitely not.
Not to play spoiler, but if you guess Leatherheads, I mean. Look, Leatherheads didn't even make its money back.
People in 2007, they see fucking George Clooney and Jim from The Office, and they go and watch that movie. That's all I'm saying.
I guess I gave you a freebie, but Leatherhead's lost $20 million.
God damn. What do you think about We Are Marshall? I have no idea how much they made. I don't think a lot, though.
So I think We Are Marshall, The Replacements, then the Rudy's one, too, to consider. So We Are Marshall, Replacements, Rudy.
How much? What year was Rudy, though? That was like low 90s. I don't think it made
it. It was 93. Yeah, I don't think. I think we can get Rudy off the list. I think you're right.
I don't think it can make comparable money. Fuck. The list keeps going through. Like every single pick looks like it could possibly be number five.
I'm going to phone a friend, though. No, what about Invincible?
Ooh. Oh, shit. That might be it.
All right, let's just guess Invincible. If we lose, we lose.
All right, Invincible is your guess. Invincible is number 9, not on the list. Oh, you guys lose the first time in a while. You actually did not say the movie.
What really?
You did not say the movie.
It might not even have been on my list.
Number 10 was Varsity Blues. Number 9 was Invincible. Number 8 was Friday Night Lights. Any Given Sunday, 7. 6, Remember the Titans. And number 5, The Rock, The Game Plan.
Wow. Well, now I've expected that. I didn't even think that would be possible.
Yeah, The Rock in The Game Plan.
Game Plan.
Damn, that's crazy.
There's a lot of football in that movie.
Okay, that's fair enough.
How much the Little Giants make? I like that movie.
I bet Little Giants made some money at the box office. How much could that budget have been?
Rick Moranis Moranis.
Rick Moranis, by the way, confirmed. Oh, no, it lost money.
Oh, shit.
That's a shame. Lost $700,000. Rick Moranis confirmed not coming back for the new Ghostbusters, by the way. He's like, I'm retired. Leave me the fuck alone.
I respect that.
I do, too. I respect that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for Rick Moranis.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else before we wrap this up? We're going to bring Jay Leno back on out here to introduce Pitbull, who's going to be performing a live song here. Very excited for that. Anything before we wrap up here? Great week in Miami, Florida here at the Aventura Mall. Thank you to Dylan's Candy Bar, also Restoration Hardware. And where were we the first day? Oh, GNC.
GNC.
And, of course, we got to thank Ellen, Jimmy Fallon. We got to thank Rob Riggle and Josh Groban as well.
I had a lot of fun. I got to say, you know, this is our second year at the Super Bowl, and I thought Atlanta was pretty good, but Miami's good as well. It'd be hard to rank them. I don't know if I could, but I will say this. Aventura Mall, one of the top malls. People say that all the time. And we saw it here. We saw it with the hospitality.
We saw it all.
And we haven't left the mall since we got here. We've been sleeping in Dick's Sporting Goods in the tent section.
Very nice. The technology in air mattresses has improved so much over the years.
I just went to the bed floor in Sears.
Smart.
I've been sleeping in that big, like 1200 Yeti cooler, like a coffin.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations to the champions of the Super Bowl, all of our listeners who are from that area. Great stuff. Congrats to anyone who was in it for the commercials. Hilarious as always.
I got to say, like, it's happy. It's good. I bet, you know, your team has such a great history. Joe Montana, played there, and I just hope my team can get back there someday.
I hope mine can get there, period.
Same here. At least you've won one. That's it. Gretel and Hansel. Oh,
actually, two, if you mentally deny that the Saints won, like true. I do.
Smart. That's always a good move.
It just didn't happen.
We're going to send it over to Jay Leno, but we're going to have Gretel and Hansel as a review later on in the week, so make sure to go see that movie. It's apparently not the worst thing of all time, so that's a plus. For Ken Jack and Trill, I'm Jeff Law. I'll send it over to Jay Leno because Pitbull is going to be performing one of his hit songs, Give Me Everything.
Whoa. Everything? It's all on the menu?
Tonight or tomorrow?
All right. Thank you, Jeff. And you want me to do the thing?
Yes.
All right. I'm going to do the thing. Have a good week at the box office.